you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's B-Y-T-E.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. We are back in studio. I am Mark Ellis. As always, Jacqueline Coley is here. And Jacqueline, what a flick we have to talk about. We've been holding off on talking about this movie in order to get one guest in particular. There's many guests that probably saw this movie in the theaters when they were kids. Everybody grew up playing this video game upon which the movie's based, but there's one particular guest that we needed to have. That's why I'm excited today.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, we were just waiting for this moment for him. that is the advertisement we're putting down, but we're just glad he's here.
It's happening now, late though it may be. Mr. Andre Meadows joining us. You know him better as Black Nerd Comedy in all corners of the interwebs. You have a thriving YouTube channel. As we were talking about before we went to air, there's a lot of other facets to being a personality online now. So you got all the social media stuff, doing Instagram, doing TikTok. But Black Nerd Comedy is where you can find Andre and all of his greatness. He celebrates movies, guys. Remember when we used to do that? Remember before we used to tear movies down and dissect them like a frog in biology class? Andre sort of puts it all back together and reminds us why we love celebrating this stuff in the first place. And our movie that we have today, Andre.
What a one to celebrate. Trust the fungus. Trust the fungus.
You're gonna have to take some magic mushrooms here, and hopefully they give you some fire, some stars, some growth. And that is, of course, Super Mario Brothers. From 1993, we are obviously doing this in anticipation of the Super Mario Brothers movie, which comes out. As of this recording, I think it's either out last night or tonight. So that movie is from Illumination, and that is 100% entirely animated. So get a lot of great vocal talent. Everybody's looking forward to this movie. This could be like $1 billion-plus grosser, but not necessarily similar to the 1993 version, which was called Super Mario Brothers, and I would say loosely based on the video games that they had at the time.
Yes.
The movie didn't quite do at the box office what I think this new one is going to be, but we're going to get into that. And I also want to give an editorial shout out on our website right now, RottenTomatoes.com. You can check out 10 awesome video games that were made into terrible movies. So you got your Hitman on there. You got your Mortal Kombat Annihilation on there.
I was going to say just 10?
Super Mario Brothers.
It's the truly terrible. Not questionable, not bad. We're not even in Assassin's Creed's territory on this one. We're talking
the worst of the worst.
The second Tomb Raider.
I think Max Payne might be on that list somewhere. Yeah. Because I mean, again, Super Mario Brothers, and we'll talk about it once we get into the movie talk segment, but like I think that there's some fun to be had, if for no other reason. The nostalgia of even this movie kind of reminds you just how movies were made, how products were turned into, how other source material was adapted into films back when we were all so very young. We also have 49 video game movies ranked by the Tomato Meter. That's another article you can click on the site. Werewolves Within is currently number one.
Oh, wow.
2021. Oh, okay. Super Mario Brothers, I mean, it's hanging in there at number 21. So it's still...
That's sad.
Look, if you're AP top 25, that's good in college basketball. Yeah. It may not be quite as shiny according to the Tomato Meter.
That's a D-plus student. You know, that's still passing, right? You will get out of college on that one.
Hey, honestly, if that's what you're getting out of college with, you shouldn't go. Stay home.
Right, true, true.
Now Jacqueline has to really get her PhD on here because before we get to 2 minutes with Tim, and then we're going to talk with Andre about what's going on with him and all this Super Mario Brothers greatness, and I say that in quotes, Jacqueline, what we do on this show sometimes, we've drifted away from it occasionally because we've been covering some like super popular movies or sets of movies that everybody knows and loves. We're going to do a synopsis today because I don't have to be the one that does it. So I'm going to go ahead and toss you the ball and ask you this question I've been dying to ask you since we started, since I met you.
I can't wait to hear this.
Jacqueline, what is the 1993 Super Mario Brothers movie about? Go.
First of all, as we say D's get degrees, be prepared for a D+ synopsis. I know this is the grade I'm getting going into it, and I'm going to rise to that occasion. Listen.
It's pass fail with the synopsis.
Yes.
Really? I was going with the D in the better hopes. Pass fail, I'm questionable. Listen, so we're taking ourselves back to New York of the 1990s, ladies and gentlemen. This is a dirtier New York.
Giuliani cleaned it up.
Definitely before Giuliani cleaned it up. This is more the New York of Coming to America. So it is dirty. It is dingier. Well, it turns out way, way, way long time ago, 65 million years ago, there was a meteorite that hit that very spot. And it actually made two separate dimensions that overlay on top of each other in New York. There is the one that had like dinosaur-like things, and then there's the New York that we get to know. And they both developed alongside each other. Eventually, we find our two plumbers, Luigi Mario and Mario Mario. They are brothers. They are bickering. Mario is the older one. Luigi is the younger one, played by the very Hispanic John Leguizamo and the very British Bob Hopkins.
Yeah, that's true.
But they are Italian plumbers without Italian accents. Very good New York accents, though. Anyway, they have been tasked to figure out what is going on with this fungus infestation, which is really what it seems like these two worlds are beginning to meld. They come across this girl named Daisy, who seems very interested in this fungus, and they somehow get transported into the dino dimension. And inside the dino dimension, they find Koopa, all of his crazy minions. He is the mayor, leader of this separate dimension, and they are trying to invade into the modern human world. They were all evolved from dinosaurs. They were all evolved from dinosaurs. And now, even though they have some of the characteristics of dinosaurs, they look like humans. That is played by Dennis Hopper. All kinds of hijinks ensue. They eventually come to realize that the fungus is trying to help them. It's because the fungus is actually the king, been melded into a fungus. They figure out a way to undo that. And everyone lives happily ever after. There's a romance somewhere in between there between Daisy and Luigi, which is awkward and silly. Oh, and Daisy studies the fungus.
Hey!
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think I got it, right?
Yeah, that was
that's a good book report.
I think I got it.
And that made it sound coherent. That makes the movie sound coherent.
That is what happened, ladies and gentlemen. But I just want to go ahead and state that the only reason why I'm also doing this is because y'all can't even watch it. Because if anybody wanted to go watch this movie right now, you better get to eBay.
Oh, I got it.
Oh, did Andre bring?
We gotta go physical media with this.
We have it.
Oh my God.
Yes, it.
Can I hold the DVD in my hand real quick?
Please.
This is
classic.
Yeah, Andre brought this in. I watched this movie in pieces on YouTube. And this is just, the Washington Post says, it's a blast.
Who said that?
The Washington Post.
Who said that?
A very reputable newspaper.
That was not Ann Hornaday. I want to see who wrote that.
May or may not be owned by a future owner of the Washington Commanders. So that's very exciting. It is also eye-popping special effects.
Yeah.
Is another good.
The 60-second preview. You know, this was back in the time when they used to have fakes reviews.
No, you're not accusing Super Mario Brothers DVD.
How much you want to bet it says, like, when Tim comes in there, I bet it says, it's a blast if you want to die. How much you want to bet that that's what this really is?
There's an exclamation point. That is the end of a sentence.
Well, it's acts as a perfect transition to our next segment because we're about to throw it over to our buddy Tim Ryan, who's going to tell us what the critics, like the Washington Post, like 60-second preview, were saying about Super Mario Brothers when it was released in 1993. Tim is, of course, our expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes. So, Tim, you only got 2 minutes. Good luck.
2 minutes with Tim.
Once video games became big business, it was inevitable that Hollywood would attempt to cash in. But one of the immediate problems was, how do you craft a narrative out of something that is essentially narrative-free? And by imposing such a narrative, aren't you taking away what's special about the games? So in the 1982 Pac-Man cartoon series, the titular hero was a working stiff with a wife and kid. And on Saturday's Supercade the following year, Frogger was a reporter and Donkey Kong was on the lam after escaping from the circus. At least Pitfall Harry actually explored jungles like he did in the game. Ironically, while Super Mario Bros. Had a slightly more defined narrative than those other games, when it came time to make the movie, there was even greater disagreement over what it should be like. The Super Mario Bros. Movie was what can politely be described as a troubled production. It had multiple scripts, arguments over whether it was a movie for kids or a dark satire, stars Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo drinking on set, and lots of finger-pointing when it flopped. It's developed something of a cult following in the ensuing years, but critics and audiences were roundly disappointed upon its release, feeling it lacked what made the game special while also not working on its own. Super Mario Bros. Is rotten at 29% on the Tomato Meter with 42 reviews, and it has a 29% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Stephen Hunter of the Baltimore Sun wrote, "Devotees of the game may derive some pleasure from seeing its obstacles given quasi-flesh and set in motion. But that inert pleasure soon pales in a torrent of none-too-special effects, confusing storylines, and characters without personalities." However, in a fresh review, Roger Hurlburt of the South Florida Sun Sentinel wrote, "Bizarre, replete in often stunning special effects, and very strange from the outset, Super Mario Bros. Is curiously entertaining, even though it often makes little sense." So that's Super Mario Bros. And if you require further listening, check out our episode on video game movies. And we've also got one episode each for two different Mortal Kombat movies. Back to you, folks.
That drinking story is actually true. So yeah. We'll talk about that and a whole lot of other things. Thank you so much, Tim. I also have the full review from the Washington Post. Hal Henson is who said it's a blast, and that's what's on the DVD cover. Hal's full review, or at least a fuller snippet, says, "This movie, which was directed by music video whiz kids Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jenkel, is sweet and funny and full of bright invention. In short, it's a blast."
No, he was sincere.
See?
He doesn't write anymore.
That was it. That was a swan song.
I didn't say that. I just said he doesn't write anymore. I'll let you determine what that means.
In short, the question that we always ask of our guests here, Andre Meadows, up. Is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about Super Mario Brothers from 1993, which is 29%?
Well, first you have to give credit that this is probably one of the few times where the critics and audience score is literally exactly the same.
It is at 29%.
You're always on a line with some things. So I say to all of you that, yes, you are wrong. Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. The audience is wrong. I'm not saying it needs to be a whole lot higher, but I just think 29% is a little wrong. Because there are definitely some things in this movie that, given what is in this movie, even with all the troubles of production, and given when it came out and what movies were like at that time, I think it should be a little bit higher. And I think there's still some things about Super Mario Bros. That I like about that I would like to see even some movies of today, so...
Okay, so it's too low for Andre Meadows. Jacqueline Coley, 29%, as Andre intimated with both the critics and the audiences. Did everybody get it wrong?
I feel bad. Like, I invited you here, and I'm just going to rip on this movie because it's awful. But it's like the Room level awful, where I level in its stupidity. I'm literally like, oh my God, get stoned and watched it.
Well, see,
it's
that's the thing.
Amazing.
That's where we're in agreement. Like it's one of those, like, I'm never gonna say it's a good movie, but I'm going to say that from an entertainment perspective, it is a very entertaining movie. And it's one of those movies where I can kind of see what they were trying to go with, but then of course you have the multiple scripts and the drinking in there.
So the reason why I say this is, if you're taking this movie seriously, Rotten Tomatoes is sober as a judge. This should be lower.
That's
if you are taking this as a camp masterpiece of stupidity and like, how did this get made and why does everyone involved in it need to be ashamed of it? Yes, this is certified fresh. This is the greatest movie ever made. If you look at this movie and are like, I want to make sure everyone involved in it doesn't go to film school. Yes. Like, legitimately.
I want to make sure everybody comes out of this smelling horrible.
You know what I mean? If you want to revel in how awful this is and even celebrate in the ridiculousness of it to where it became iconic, we are here.
Okay,
try to tell me anything other than that, I will hit you in the face.
I think there's a little bit of a middle ground if you're going to go from this movie being extremely horrible, like comparing it to The Room. So The Room is different, Yeah. But 29%.
Only based on budget. The delusion that allowed them to make The Room allowed them to make this.
You also had a big difference that we'll talk about in movie talk between The Room and this. I'm going to say Rotten Tomatoes. Upon rewatching it, I'm going to say 29%. I'm not going to like protest. I'm not going to like make a sign and like stand outside Rotten Tomatoes.
Why
be like,
not?
Come on. I'm going to be like, I can get this to the 30s. I can get this to the 35
why?
Percentile.
I think you just need to be in some shit. That's why you want to put it in the 30s.
That's why we're going to talk about it right now with our movie talk segment. Hit the music, Brian. So before we even get to the movie, when did Super Mario Brothers, when did the Nintendo Entertainment System first enter our lives? We were like the last family on the block to get a Nintendo, but back in the day, you could go to a video store and you could rent the entire Nintendo
system. I remember
system.
That, yeah.
So we rented it a couple times, have like a test drive with this thing. And I remember like we'd play Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt. And it was just like, this is the most I'm never going outside again. This is so exciting. And then 2 days later, you got to take it back to the video store. One day my dad came home. This is shortly before we moved from Columbia, Maryland to Virginia when he got out of the service, and he had the Nintendo with him, and we lost our minds, and we just played Super Mario Brothers that entire summer till we moved, and then we played it once we got to Virginia instead of making friends. So it was very exciting to hear that there was a Super Mario Brothers movie that was going to be coming out. But again, Andre, you're our guest. When you first stumbled upon the Nintendo Entertainment System and our beloved brothers who are plumbers, where were you? What was going on?
Well, yeah, Nintendo was kind of like the level of how you made friends for quite some time. Because if you were in the neighborhood, you had a Nintendo, everybody wanted to go hang out at your place. The more games you had, the more friends you would want to have to come over. And it was one of those things of like, it became like the Starbilly Sneetches. Of like, are you a Nintendo? You're a kid to have a Nintendo or don't have one. And your friendship mattered with that. Mm-hmm. So it was like, it was something that everybody on the block wanted to have. And I remember finally getting mine Christmas morning. My parents... You know how sometimes
how
you have those
parents. How old are you?
Old enough.
No, I mean, what Christmas was it like that you got it?
Oh, this would be Christmas. Like
I'm just
80,
trying to picture the age you were.
Yeah, like 87, 88. It was when the action set, because there was like the original Nintendo with Rob the Robot, but then they had the action set with the Zapper and Mario Brothers.
So we're talking maybe an 8-9-year-old.
So
that's
yeah,
this.
So
that's
what happened?
Fairly early in Nintendo's matriculation.
Fairly early.
We were going over to Andre's house.
Yeah. Well. No, but we'll get there.
Yeah, but like 88. Yeah, but like 88, 89. So that was the thing. It was like when you got that system, it was like such a like an extra rite of passage to now having that. And I remember you also, I had those parents that was like, oh, you're not getting that. That costs too much money. Yep. You're not getting into this house. You got an Atari. You're good. You know, so, but then, of course, is that one Christmas, they're like, all right, we went out to Toys R Us last minute, and there happened to be one on the shelf, so we hooked you up, and, you know, and then, so that was what, sort of the beginning of it, but, like, it was the system that kind of started it, but then, like, that's when the obsession came in.
Yeah.
Because it was like, then you got Super Mario Brothers 2, then you got Nintendo Power Magazine coming in the mailbox, then you got the Super Mario Brothers Super Show cartoon coming on, and all of this, and then Super Nintendo with Super Mario World after Mario 2 and Mario 3. And then this all leads up to this movie. And so at this point, I am so in the Mario cult. Like, I am so, like, ready for anything Mario gives me that when I see this movie's coming out, even with everything shown to me of, like, this ain't, they literally say in the movie, this ain't no game. I'm still like, I'm ready. I'm ready to do this. And saw it day one when it opened and saw it a couple more times in the theater because I don't know if everyone remembers these. There used to be the Dollar Theater.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
After a short run in Mario Brothers
still
Run.
Still have the Dollar Theater.
They're still around a little bit. Yeah, yeah. But, like, you know, Mario Brothers Run was a little short.
There was a movie that came out a couple weeks after Super Mario Brothers that sort of ended every other theatrical run up to that point.
Yeah. With dinosaurs on top of that.
It did have dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Mario had the dinosaurs first.
Yeah.
By a couple weeks.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then a little movie called Jurassic Park came out.
Yeah.
I know, you have to, because I think they said something about, like, I think some people that worked on Jurassic Park actually saw the Yoshi that's in Super Mario Brothers, and you could just imagine them being like, oh, that's cute,
nice
guys.
Try.
That's very adorable. I think we're doing something with dinosaurs, too. We'll let you see it in a couple weeks.
But what's really funny is before these movies happened in this town, they were both thought to be the same. They were both thought to be, like, a level of, like, potential.
Yeah. And then when you have Mario as the character, as big as Mario was, of course it's like, oh, yeah, this is going to be the
Going into the summer, you look at Jurassic Park and Super Mario Brothers as tentpole, and obviously, even though Michael Crichton had written Jurassic Park, everybody knew who Mario was. Everybody walking on the street, it was almost like, by the 90s, new babies that were born just had that, you know how like kids are born, but they just kind of know who Chewbacca is. They know what the Beatles are. It's like you knew who Mario was. And so you knew that there was going to be this movie coming out. You knew who Mario was, Jacqueline, because you also apparently had a Nintendo before I did.
Yeah, so I was a product, I was a child of divorce and generational trauma. So we were buying affection through gifts in my household. I had a divorced dad in a different state, grandparents that didn't want to be alienated, and a new stepdad that was very happy to get my attention. So yeah, I had a Mario at 89. Oh, I had a Sega, baby.
I was going to say, I bet you were an early Genesis kid.
I had an early Genesis kid. I was an early Microsoft kid. And like, again, I was an only child. It wasn't like y'all, though, because again, I was the girl that wanted to play these games. So like, I was playing the girl early games by myself. Boys were the only ones that could do that sort of thing. And I will admit, my Mario stuff was limited. Like, I did Mario for sure. Remember Mickey's Clubhouse, that Nintendo game?
That was an underrated
Mickey
game.
Mickey Mousecapade?
Yeah. Like, that one where it was, like, the adventure. Oh, my God. Castlevania. All of the RPGs where it was just you and you just go long-term. I love those. But I would say Mario was not as good because everybody liked to play Mario in teams. Everybody liked to play, like, Luigi Mario. You die, you go. You die, you go.
I always let my little brother be Mario because I was rooting for him to perish. And so I could be Luigi. It's just like in sports terms, I was rooted for the underdog.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to be Luigi, like the brother who the princess is not expecting to show up. She's like, oh, it's you?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, Mario died. I'm here.
But that's the difference too with even Sega. Like they had that with Sonic and Tails, but everyone just wanted to be Sonic. It was just about you and your solo adventure way more than it was about the other ones. Anyway, the whole point is, so I definitely had an early Mario. But I switched over to Sega very, very early. So literally NES is the only one I have. I never had a 64. I stopped. Like,
see, we got Sega Genesis late in the game too. And so by then Super Nintendo was already cropping up. And I remember, still very good friends to this day, the Whitehead family, they had a Super Nintendo early. And I think me and my brother were just like, we didn't even want a Super Nintendo for the longest time. We're like, no, we're good with Sega Genesis. We got Altered Beast. We got Golden Axe. We're good. And then we just kept going over to the Whiteheads to play like the Super Mario World. And we're like, this is a really good system.
If you had siblings, Super Mario NES was the perfect one because they had the four controller click-in. And that literally like changed the game because then you could play four player. And that was really it for me.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So then the movie comes, and it almost seems like around this time in Hollywood and going back to the 80s too, it's almost like studios begrudgingly made these movies based on other properties. Like, well He-Man's really popular. We got to have a He-Man movie. Super Mario Brothers is really popular. I guess we got to have a Super Mario movie.
Well, see, but about that, though. So something I find very interesting about that time, and I think this will explain, because the big question people always ask, especially nowadays, is like, why did Super Mario Brothers, this bright, colorful Mushroom Kingdom, peppy music, everything, turns into Blade Runner Jr.? But...
facts.
I think you have to look at that past, because before, and you'll probably remember this, like Transformers the movie, G.I. Joe the movie, you know, like a lot of the movies were very much, let's just take the cartoon or let's just take the thing and just extend it.
Just make it longer,
like
right.
90 minutes, right? But then Batman comes along. Mm. And Batman was very much... Batman at that time, unless you were like a hardcore comic person, was very much, okay, it's Adam West, the reruns of that show, or it's Super Friends, the cartoon. Mm. And then this Tim Burton movie comes along, and it's all dark, you know, at the time, and like Keaton playing Batman, and it's taken like a different level than what we've ever seen Batman
and
before.
And you felt the streets and the dirt in Gotham City.
Exactly. And then after that, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles comes out. Yeah. And this, again, is that for the comic books? You got this wacky cartoon with these four turtles eating pizzas, yelling cowabunga, and now here's this movie where they're live action and they're dark. Mm. You know, it's dark and it's got this more serious tone, more akin to the comics,
you
right?
You felt the sewer.
You felt the sewer, right? You know? Then you got the Addams Family coming out. And the Addams Family, even though that was always kind of in that darker tone, but it was still a wacky sitcom, but now you've got this little bit edgier. It's PG-13. There's blood and references.
Yeah,
to that.
That was early 90s. Yeah, it was like early 90s mm-hmm. was very gothy, very sort of like, you know, yeah.
Yeah, then you have Dick Tracy was after, that. So I feel like that's what happened with Super Mario Brothers. I could see, because there's even like reports that say that Nintendo was very aware that they wanted to make something a little bit edgier. Maybe this wasn't exactly what they wanted, but there was this sort of concept of, let's take these classic properties and do something a little bit edgier and more, you know, more all audiences with it, all ages with it, because that will justify it being in the movies, especially when you have, like, even with Mario, you had the Super Mario Bros. Super Show, which is like you had live action Mario and Luigi with Captain Lou Albano and Danny Wells. How do you make the movie look different? Mm. And so I could see them wanting to do that. It's just the process of getting there. Well, that's a very weird thing.
Very weird thing. And then also I think what's interesting with it too is if you really look at it, as much as it's ridiculousness, it's the splitting of the difference. They also still made a camp movie.
Right.
And that was the part too, which I thought was interesting. If you look at the two, I consider only performances within it that work, which is Dennis Hopper and Bob Hopkins. Again, British man playing Italian plumber. Didn't think it would work as well as it does, but it does work. Yeah. Like, I made the joke.
He brought that Eddie Valiant in.
He did.
I think it was a stroke of casting genius, the ethnicity aside, because Bob Hoskins was everybody, even if, like, kids didn't know his name, everybody saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which he starred in as Eddie
Another
Valiant.
Another dark one.
The advantage he had as Eddie Valiant, A, is that him and his co-star Roger couldn't do whiskey shots in between takes, like him and John Leguizamo did in this movie.
Please give me a shot. Mm-hmm. Well, he did a shot in the movie, but then he like goes over the air.
Yeah. But so, and so I think every kid just kind of knew, this is an adult I trust, right?
Yes, mm-hmm.
And then you have what, like, again, John Leguizamo, the perfect sort of companion to him, playing that underdog role. He's maybe not quite as street smart as his much older brother, who isn't really related by blood. He just kind of...
No, the casting wasn't bad, except for it's against type, in the sense of, like, these would not be the people I would think of, especially when you think of, again, Italian. I could just, if I was an Italian, I'd be livid. Like, let's be real. Like,
I'm pretty sure De Niro and Pacino said no.
You know, facts. But then when you look
Pesci as King Koopa would have been pretty funny.
But so that point, he's doing Eddie Valiant. He's doing the straight man in a camp movie sort of performance so well. And then Hopper is just giving Sheriff and Nottingham realness. Oh, like, Sheriff and Nottingham realness.
He is all about
it. He is giving face and body, and he is just living his life with this thing. But that's the problem. These two guys are selling something that doesn't work when you put it next to each other. Like, you can't have that be humans. It worked when it was Hopkins and it was cartoons, and it'll work with Dennis Hopper if everybody else is in on the joke.
Yeah.
But you can't have these two very earnest performances that are in such contrast to themselves and even the world around them.
Well, that is obviously, and there's, like you said, there's been different articles and retrospectives about it, about that was one of the challenges with this movie, was that there were so many different versions of this movie, and they all lean from it being dark, because that was what some of the directors and original producers wanted, to it being lighter, because it's Disney/Hollywood Pictures getting involved, and there were different writers, and even the script that the cast got when they got there was not the script that they got when they signed up. And so, yeah, so that's what's so interesting to watch this movie, because you can tell... Like, you can almost see the different color pages of a script when you're watching it, because you're like, okay, that doesn't seem to connect with this, and that doesn't connect with that. And, you know, in tradition of many cuts nowadays, there's also a longer cut of the movie that got released. There's a group called the Super Mario Brothers Movie Archive, who have been getting, like, interviews and all these, like, old things that we haven't seen from this movie, and they found, like, a longer version of this. It still has, like, time codes and stuff on it. But, like, it fills in some of the gaps that were that in the movie, or... from the novelization that I may or may not have read.
The novelization.
Damn. How the novelization of Willow.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
I think Willow's a little more appreciated as fine art than the Super Mario Brothers
movie.
The
score tells a different tale, sir.
I'm surprised that the Super Mario Brothers movie got anything more than like that, those sticker books that you had when you flip through and just like put the sticker where it belongs. And it seems like when you're watching this movie, all the stickers got jumbled up.
Yeah. But see, but that's the one thing I will defend about this movie, because look, I can understand people talking about it being bad or being cheesy or whatever. But especially in this very nostalgic, you know, let's reboot everything, let's think about everything. I'm not going to name any names, but there's definitely some movies that are now being put at like a high regard that I kind of look on the same level of at least cheesiness. If not, they could be better made, but at least from the cheese camp factor alone.
Fat eggs, yeah.
Super Mario Brothers is like right there. And I think what always just brings it down is that it's an adaptation of Mario. If you were to be like, man, there was this movie I used to rent back in the day in the VHS where there were two dimensions where one side was dinosaurs.
If it was Orgasmo, like the Trey Parker, Matt Stone, like low budget random movie. Like if it had that like Napoleon Dynamite indie budget to it, you're right. Yeah, it would have a totally different vibe.
That's one of the things that producer Brian and I were talking, as all boys do. We make great points when we're in the bathroom together. And we were talking about how this movie is so more watchable if you're not comparing it to the video game. If it's just this random movie where it's just made for kids, I actually really appreciate the two-dimensional thing. I think that's a cool, the meteorite, they killed all the dinosaurs. Yeah. It's Earth. They do mention 65 million years ago, which nobody knew that 65 million number until it was on the Jurassic Park poster. So good on you doing your research, Super Mario team. It hits Earth and it creates this alternate dimension. I think that is a really cool premise. And I think that the movie does a salient job of, even for the kids, spelling out that there's this different world that's sort of below our world. And the like the Blade Runner thing you talk about, where it's like the different version of Manhattan.
Yeah, Dino Hatton.
Yeah. And people eating like hot dogs that are made out of bugs. It's like this cool thing that these people are aware that they desperately want to get somewhere else.
Yeah, they show it right in the beginning of the movie. It was like they're human looking, but yet they still hatch from eggs, as Daisy does.
The lady pushing her egg, and she's like, get your hands off my baby.
Yeah, and everything's like all electric based around, like all the cars and stuff like that. So it is one of those weird things of like, but there is clearly these sort of darker, more adult tones that they try to clean up with like a score. Like they put that Alan Silvestri score in there where it's like and you're like, no, I mean, that's cute, but like clearly,
why do they call Alan Silvestri for cheesiness? Like, he's done so many cheesy movies, I think just his favors. Like, he's got a few he did Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
He
also did Back to the Future, his score is criminally underrated for Young Guns, too.
But basically, because he did Back to the Future, and he's proven that he can really underscore these very poppy video game moments, they keep calling him. Don't get me wrong, I love the Ready Player One soundtrack, but I'm almost like, Alice Silvestri is not going to save your movie. You know what I mean? Like, the gods will not save
you. That's what they were trying, though.
The one thing I will say about this is, because I think when it comes to video game movies and why we have these terrible lists, is one thing we can very much appreciate, having watched shows like The Last of Us, having watched the early days of The Walking Dead, having watched the early days of Game of Thrones, when you have people who at least respect the material, or at least respect the person who made the material enough to be respectful of the material as they adapt it, no matter what happens, I don't know, I just find like it doesn't go as far off the rails as the people who clearly are not. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, this is an example of the people who were making it didn't like it. They didn't care. They didn't like it enough to even try to come up with a good idea for how to be both faithful to it and then also expand it.
I feel like the makers of this film, and I don't want to put it just on the directors, I think that this is studio heads on down, looked at this property and looked at this movie they're making with that same eyes that even I do sometimes in my adulthood, where I'm like, oh, that's for kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So like you see anything animated and you just have that initial like, oh, okay, it's animated, it's for kids. It's not. Animation is not just for children. But when you look at Super Mario Brothers, I think the studio at the time was like, this is just for kids. Kids will just lap anything up as long as we put a familiar skin on it. And that's the difference between this and something like The Last of Us, where the care and sort of making sure that you're honoring the source material was a factor in every step of the process, as opposed to this, Andre, where it feels like where the moments where they said, oh, we need to make this more like Mario, maybe in post-production, like, let's just add this sound effect, let's just do this, that's where the movie falters.
Well, it's funny because, like I said, I think part of it is also, and I always try to go back to the time that it was made, because at the time, I know we know so much about Mario now from his various games, but at the time you had the three Nintendo games, you had the Super Mario World, and there is definitely some lore in there, but definitely not to the level that we have at the time. Also, I can't help but to feel like there, at least at that time, there was a little bit of like, this is popular, but how long is it going to last? Because we just came out of the video game crash of the 80s, and yet Nintendo brings it back, but there's probably still that feeling at that time until we got Genesis and yeah, this is my end.
Like, they felt like they were making a Pet Rock movie more than they felt that they were making a franchise.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, now looking back, it's like, of course this was going to last forever, but who knows? But even still, like I said, because they were trying to go with that weird, like, darkish tone like they do with some of these other movies, it is still interesting to see how they incorporate certain things. Like, if you look throughout Dino Hatton, there's like a big sweeping shot. You can look at some of the buildings, and like, there's a shop named Hammer Brothers. There's one named Bullet Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the shoes that they wear, they incorporated the jumping with these really cool boots, which, you know, talk about the movie, but if David River released those boots as actual shoes to buy, sneakerheads would buy those up immediately.
There'd be a line around the block. Yeah.
So they, you know, they figure out a way to do the jumping, and then putting Bullet Bills in that. You know, so they figured out all these different ways to use at least the names and the properties of it. I mean, you have Koopa, it's President Koopa as opposed to King Koopa. But, you know, you have all these different ways that they did incorporate it. They even found a way to do the colors of Mario and Luigi towards the end. You know, it's just, they're variations of how they do them. Like with Goombas.
Oh, they gave you the colors? That is faithful.
Yeah, yeah.
they you did. Were reaching.
That's something. That's still something. Compared to some, like I said, compared to some things.
They named they it don't Super Mario it. Brothers. That's something too.
they're still plumbers.
Yes.
They're
exactly.
still plumbers.
They were named
exactly.
Mario and Luigi. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So I'm
so happy for you.
As you should be. Because at that time, that was something. I mean, like I said, it's very
fair.
Easy.
At that time. You know what? At that time, that was something, but
did you walk out of the theater? Did you walk out of the theater in 93 when you saw this movie for the first time? Did you say, "Oh, that was a good movie. I need to see it again"? Or
yeah,
were you just
I saw it again because I think that's and that's why I do get into this where you talk about when you look at things more critically nowadays. I think there was something, there was a vibe, at least in my circle, there was a vibe of like we felt the edginess of this compared to the video game, and that was something we actually like because we were right at that age of like can't watch the rated R stuff yet. But a little bit too old for some of the younger stuff. But this is like one of those things of like how I feel about this is probably how like some kid felt when they saw the first Transformers movie, where it's just like, oh, this is different. And we're looking at it like, this is not like the cartoon. But they were probably like, oh, this is different from the cartoon. That's how sometimes I feel about that with Mario. Like, this felt like something that was like, ooh, it's Mario. But
when did the first Transformers come out? 2000?
Yeah, yeah. But
I think that was high school. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It just had this different vibe to it. And especially for someone like myself who literally watched like the Super Mario Brothers Super Show and seeing that version of it where it was very goofy, very comical, you know, like it just had this different vibe to it. And having grown up watching like I said, other movies like Batman, Ninja Turtles, and Addams Family, and all that, it felt like it was in that vein. That at the time, I didn't even take into account, like, oh, this is bad or this is not super faithful. It was just like, I saw Mario, I saw Luigi, I saw some things referenced. I saw there's a woman named Bertha, and I know that's a fish from Mario 3. I know that the garbage men are sniffets.
Toad
is in there.
There's an interesting point you bring up, though, with just being a kid and seeing your characters that, again, if you're a kid, you're just buying into this is Mario and Luigi.
Yeah.
And seeing them just act differently than they did in the game. They were actually real people in this one to a certain extent because in the game, your quest is to rescue this princess, right? Mm. But it's such a benign, like, you, it's like, oh, thank you, Mario, you're my hero. But you never really, when you see John Leguizamo actually, like, be, like, smitten with Daisy, and he's, like, asking around, they, like, go on this awkward, like, double date.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, oh, this is what adults do. Like, I'm growing up. I'm hitting puberty as I'm watching this movie because they're plumbers and they're video game characters, but they're real people and they have real needs, Jacqueline.
Yeah, that's why they made the Goombas dance.
That's right. Because they're evil, but they have a little bit of a heart. And something...
That was the dumbest setup. No,
that
we
was
are
so
not...
Beautiful.
I see how quickly y'all just want to turn the page.
No, I'm all about it. Let's talk about the elevator scene. I love that scene.
The Goombas dance. You want to tee us up?
As they said, they're loyal and stupid, as Koopa says in there. But yes, they're in the elevator. They're wearing the iconic outfits now. And they're trapped in the elevator with Goombas. And so to try to distract them, there's a little song playing in the background. And so they just sway. Luigi starts swaying the Goombas. And then they just start to dance. And it's just a cute little moment. It's a cute moment with the Goombas.
Because he outsmarted literally their biggest foe.
Yeah.
With the power of swaying.
Well, they're not, you know, they're like too bright. And it's a very cute elevator scene. It's like the Ninja Turtles, the Bay Turtles scene where they're in the elevator doing a little hip hop.
So. I'm going to let you have this one and the road chimp.
But there is something I do want to give.
Everyone has their things.
I'll come back for that.
Everyone has their things.
I do have to give this movie. I think this is something that I do have to give credit for with the movie, even compared to movies today, and that is the production of this movie. Like just the design of this movie and how, even if it looks dirty, just how real it feels. Like something I saw someone mention this in a YouTube video talking about the movie, but I didn't even realize it. There's a part where Koopa is in like his office. And you can see from his window the actual set of Dino Hatton, like from his window. Mm-hmm. And it is like the legit set they were on earlier. And just like feeling that depth is really cool because it's like, you know, especially nowadays with a lot of things being CG, even the backgrounds, everything, like it's nice to see that they did go to North Carolina and make this entire Dino Hatton be like a real place and put all these people in it. So that way when you're seeing them running through this, you feel that grunginess sometimes. Of them going through Dino Hatton.
I thought that the Dennis Hopper as Koopa, I thought that was a stroke of casting genius.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. It's because it did remind me of the same way that the Sonic movies cast Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik, because if you are a parent and you're taking kids to see this movie, you know who Dennis Hopper is. You've seen Dennis Hopper for a decade. You've seen him in stuff like Easy Rider. Like, you know this guy. This guy's an actor, okay? So he's at least somebody that you can glom onto. And I will say his performance, without getting too political, reminds me of somebody who you may have seen in the news.
Absolutely. Yes. And that was the best.
It's almost like Trump saw this movie and is like, that's the guy I gotta be.
And a germaphobe
And a germaphobe. And it was honestly the best part about it. It was so earnest. Like I said, Sheriff of Nottingham realness. Yeah. Like, I mean, he was really about it.
I just remember being in this movie, and this is before, like, you walk in, you know what the running time and all that stuff is. I do remember, like, wondering, okay, I get what you're doing here. I didn't think the movie was good when I saw it in the theater. And I remember being like, how much longer we got to be here? Because I do want to go home and watch and play Super Mario Brothers. Like, it at least made me want to play the game again. But I also remember this movie not really spelling out to you that we're getting towards a conclusion or like it just kind of felt like we're just keep existing in this world for a long time. So I remember feeling the length of this movie, and it maybe felt longer than the actual runtime was.
Well, then you should watch the director's cut.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
Because he needs that, right? Yeah. He needs that in his life.
Look, I do definitely agree that, like, you know, even, again, with the script changes and everything, that probably muddled it up a little bit. But, yeah, I do agree that, like, there's a really good story element in this. And then going back to Dennis Hopper's performance, this is something I didn't even notice until recently, because they talk about how they're evolved from dinosaurs. And so with Dennis Hopper, King Koopa, he's evolved from the Tyrannosaurus Rex. I didn't notice until recently, he constantly has like his arms like close to him, kind of like T-Rex arms when he's talking and stuff. And so I was like, oh, that's a really neat little thing that
also
he added there.
Also a posture of the maybe person. Have you noticed how that said that? Like, hey guys.
Very true, very true.
The posture of the maybe person is an all-time quote from this show.
I live on this internet, and I will not pretend that I don't.
The posture of the maybe person. Yeah. Well, like, I will say this, and this goes back to, like, my love of sports, is that you watch a season, right? Mm-hmm. And you can more often than not point to when a team lost a critical game, and then they go on a run. And it's like, oh, maybe that was the turning point. This was not necessarily the turning point yet for video game movies, because for every good one that we got, like Mortal Kombat 95, we got, it seems like, a dozen bad ones.
But Mortal Kombat is, I love Mortal Kombat, absolutely, right. One of the best. But there's cheesiness in that as well.
Certainly.
For sure.
But that one, it felt like the source material was more naturally ingrained into...
Well, they based it off of, as much as they could, off of the actual
Right, because the Super Mario Brothers game arguably gave you more story than you got with the Mortal Kombat game, but they still pulled something out of it. Mm. But now, we actually look forward to video game movies, especially something like this new, the Super Mario Brothers the movie, because it feels like we know how to do it. And I think the world of animation serves Mario so well it's more seamless for all the youths that are going to be going to this movie and seeing, like, oh, Mario looks like this in the video game, looks like this. This is just, I just have less pressure on me because I don't have the controller. Like, I think this movie coming out, I think this is going to be gigantic. I think it's going to be over $1 billion.
Yeah. But I think, like I said, I think that's also very telling of our time. I think at that time, when the 93 movie came out, it was this concept, even like you said, with some of the creators, is like, well, we don't want to just make the game a live action and that's it. Like, we got to put our edge on it. We got to put our spin on it because I'm the director, I'm the producer, whatever.
Right.
Whereas I feel like we are now in that era of The Last of Us and this movie of just like, no, we need to be as close to the source material as possible. Ask Sonic. Which that's still the one thing that I always think about. Just
complete
side note.
I actually think that was the turning point in video game movies. I think that was
changing
actually
Sonic's design.
No, I think that
the
was the, no, I think that
Sonic
was the
going
change
to the dentist
studios because the director told them.
Yeah.
The director was like, y'all are idiots. Yeah. And the director was like, this is stupid. And the studio told them, granted, this was in the messy part of Paramount when they were still trying to figure stuff out. They were dealing with the Redman. The studio just pushed ahead with their ideas and it went so badly, so quickly that they were like, you were right, let's switch it over. And I think that switched in the sense of like, trust the nerds. The nerds know because they know what the angry effers are going to say if we don't get this
right. They're giving us a sneak preview on Twitter as to how this movie is going to be received
and
if we don't embrace
it. Like now I think studios are paying attention to that to be like, listen to the nerds. The nerds know and the nerds, because there's been enough success to where they have to listen. Up until that point, they'd kept messing it up enough to where they didn't have to listen.
Right.
They've been interfering enough to where certain things were successful and certain things weren't. Again, I still do believe video game adaptations are hard, so don't hire the wrong team. That's where the studio messes up first. But the second part is, if you hire the right team, listen to them.
Yeah, and then there was no 93 or 90 through Twitter for them to listen to how Mario was coming out, because you probably would have heard some of these things. Also, just as a side, I am very, very shocked. Maybe it was because of Super Mario Brothers' failure. I'm surprised we did not get like a Sonic the Hedgehog movie of the 90s, just of how big he was. Like, but like a like puppet, like costume character.
Like a Ninja Turtle.
I think they wanted to. I think the same reasons why. Because remember, this actually had a high watermark for a while. This was kind of like cleared the way for at least 5 years before they really went back into video games.
And it scarred Nintendo for a generation.
Yeah.
From they literally, lending their properties to any sort of big screen adaptation.
Yeah, so absolutely. What we had after this were like Blank Man and like Meteor Man and like random little superhero adaptations
two
that were
underrated films, in my opinion.
But movies that were not intended to be whatever. And that, by the way, Meteor Man and Blank Man, guess what they gave Worf to, which changed it all in the end? Blade.
There you go.
That was it. That was literally the progression of it. Yeah. That's how that went. And
Black
so,
Steel would like to have a word.
And Steel, yes, and Steel. But like, but literally, for a long time, they were just these B movies that you would send to either crappy former TV stars or
basketball players,
athletes, whatever. Put them in a suit because they have a built-in audience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it still might have just been Shaq walking around as an Orlando Magic uniform
with
the stuff on top. But, I mean, look, Super Mario Brothers, for what it's worth, I think that it did, whether it intended to do it this way or not, it shaped the future of video game movies, and it gave at least a starting point to grow from, and that's where we are now in 2023 with all these great video game possibilities that we actually look forward to. We think they could be quality entertainment.
Yeah, and say what you will about the campiness, the cheesiness, the badness, or whatever about Super Mario Brothers, but I think there's something to be said, and I'm sure Mario's involvement has a lot to do with it, but this is literally 30 years later. People are still talking about this movie. There's still videos about this movie. There's still discussion about the movie. There's still thoughts about this movie when making another video game adaptation. And I don't know. For me, it's always, I will always appreciate a way out there movie that's wrong that I remember over a safe movie that is bland that I will forget the moment I walk out the theater.
Oh,
and I think Super Mario
nice.
Brothers is so that movie. It is so that even if you don't like it, you are not going to forget it. And there's something very special about that. And I think also even the way that the movie is made, just even the process of this movie, because remember, this was a movie that major studios want to do, and they went with the independent studio because they knew they would have a little bit more control, I guess, or they thought they did, as well as, you know, there's also like merchandising and things like that. But like, even just that concept of it, like, that's something we don't see nowadays. There's no way that some like random like indie studio is gonna go, I'm gonna take the biggest property that you have and make a movie out of it. So it's just some interesting things about that movie making, that even though it went off the rails, there's a fascination about it that you would not see in movies nowadays.
And there's varying reports about how well this movie did at the box office, but it's on its best day, it might have recouped its budget. Because the budget, I think, was maybe like $40 million-ish, and it might have gotten there worldwide.
Right, but they want it. They obviously wanted this to be a hit. And then, like,
they thought it could be Jurassic Park.
Yeah, and then Jurassic Park showed up.
Two weeks later.
They thought it could be Jurassic Park.
How excited are you for the new Super Mario Brothers movie? Are you losing your mind?
I am very excited. The animation, like you said, the animation definitely lends itself to this property, and I think that what I like about, at least from what I've seen so far, is I love that they are incorporating different references in a very unique way. Like, the score is a mix of a movie score but with Super Mario sounds in it. They made a commercial, fake commercial, that uses the theme song from the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, where the Mario Brothers and Plumbers are game, and others would get all the fame.
How are you feeling about that voice?
The voice is the typical thing. We get all the celebrities to do the voices, and you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. But
it sounds like Charlie Day is giving it his all.
I like Jack Black Day is Bowser. Luigi. Yeah. Jack Black is
so
Bowser.
So
I think it's going to, I don't think that is going to be a deterrent.
Look at you. That's the realest thing you've said. You're like, I don't think that's going to be a deterrent. No, and that is the only thing about that you've been honest about.
I'm very excited about this movie. Are there other people I would have cast in some of these parts? Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I don't think that is going to take away from the movie. And I think that the people they got are going to give the best they're going to get.
And just don't take Spike away from my boy Sebastian Maniscalco.
By the way, though, but that's what I'm saying. So I'm very also excited for Anya, because I want to see her do voice, because I've always said that she does amazing face, which means that I think she does really great nonverbal acting. Mm-hmm. Like, she does great, like, Split. The reason why that movie works is because you see everything working out on her face as we just watch this dude go insane. So I'll be very interested to see how she is just a vocal performance.
Yes. And just as I have to give a note again, Yoshi. The Yoshi in there is super cute. Like I said, upstaged by a big T-Rex a few weeks later, but I thought at the time that animatronic, that Yoshi was very, very adorable. There's a lot of things to like about this movie, as insane as this movie is. And the fact that this cast, with all that was going on with it, gave their all as best they could. I think John Leguizamo and Bob Hoskins had good chemistry.
Fair.
It's at least worth a watch one time.
All right, so Andre Meadows says, it's a blast. Let's hit that music and transition to our clothes, Brian. If I make you President Koopa of entertainment, right? Do you release this movie like on streaming services? I think it's kind of cool that it's hard to get.
I want a full on like 30th anniversary, but like a 30th anniversary release, but like no holds barred. Like tell all the stories, tell how insane it was. Like we're okay with it. We'll put the little disclaimer, the opinions of whatever does not match the studio.
It would
just let it all out. I think people would appreciate that.
I wouldn't hate like a 3-part documentary about the making.
Oh,
this has
document like streaming documentary written all over it.
I would not hate it. What I loved is having you finally in studio, Andre. It was so great. We've been talking about you being on the show there's so many properties, whether it's Ninja Turtles or Sonic that you celebrate online. But having you here for Super Mario Brothers, this is like sort of the culmination.
I mean, it was definitely not bad having the wiki article literally sitting across for us for the entire episode. Oh my God. Oh my God.
I also have, this is not the novelization, but this is like the behind the scenes.
Microchips to movie stars.
Microchips to movie stars.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Has official art from the movie and everything and behind the scenes.
Such a nerd.
I love this movie.
I don't say that as a diss. That was a compliment.
No, absolutely.
That's how he's known. Black Nerd Comedy, wherever you enjoy your online endeavors. What you got going on? You got stuff coming out. I'm sure you're probably going to be doing some stuff covering the release of Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Yeah, we'll definitely check out the Super Mario Brothers movie and whatever movies. I'm excited. Like, this is a very interesting time for me because it's like, I actually was in the theater not too long ago and the trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie came up, and then immediately after was a trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, and I'm just like, I am living my best life
you
right
should
now.
Do that like and Issa a, video be like, it's me season. It's me season. You know what I mean?
Power Rangers is back with a 30th anniversary special. I'm like, this is, you know, it took long enough. It took long enough.
You earned it.
Like
talk
you,
to Marvel and DC all you want to. That's fun. But I over here, It is Mario. It is Power Rangers. It is Sonic. It is Spider-Man in the Spider-Verse. And it is Ninja Turtles.
Check out Andre. Again, Black Nerd Comedy, wherever you enjoy going online. YouTube's probably a great hub for that. And he just, when you're watching him, he's funny, endearing, makes you feel like a kid, and celebrate all this stuff that we loved once upon a time and can still love well into adulthood. For this show, rate, subscribe, do all that great stuff that you love doing. Wherever you listen to us or watch us, do whatever that platform encourages you. For Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong, my co-host Jacqueline Coley, what do we have coming up next week?
Next week, I don't know, but I think we're going to be high when we get there. It's going to be our 25 favorite stoner movies. Another compilation to celebrate 420. Light up if you can, if it's legal where you are.
I was going to say, are we taping that in the morning?
No. Okay. Yeah. Brian in our legal department, he's our legal guy. He won't see this, but I would love it if he did, because Brian in our legal department would have a fit if it was ever even implied that we were in this building under the influence.
All right. Well, I've met Brian. He's a very nice guy. He's not producer Brian. There's a lot of Brians running around. All our Brians equally, but legal Brian is the one that we have to abide by.
We will be sober as a judge.
The dude abides.
Yeah, talking about the highest movies ever made.
All right. Well, for our special guest, Andre, Black Nerd Comedy Meadows, Jacqueline Coley, producer Brian Remsen's hanging out here with us. I am Mealy Mark Ellis and the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week. And we're sorry, Mario, your princess is in another castle.
Jesus.